From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 6th day of March, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson from TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com, part of the elevator system that services the southern part of Illinois and a portion of Indiana. He's here in Champaign County at the elevator. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast today with Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He'll help us take a deeper dive into what's still happening with the second crop corn in South America. And we'll do all of that on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at 428 and three quarters. That was up 2.5 cents. July at 440, 2.5 higher. And December futures at $4.61, a penny and three quarters higher. May soybeans, $11.48 and a quarter, three quarters lower. July down a quarter at 11.58 and three quarters. And November soybeans at 11.42 and a quarter, down 2 cents for the day. Bean meal futures up 50 cents. The bean oil, 28 cents higher. A wheat futures soft red at 531, down 20, and the hard red at 556 and a quarter, 13 lower, both of those in the May contract as well. Live cattle futures at $187.25, down 75. Feeders were off $1.30 at 255.87 and a half, and lean hogs at $85 even, down 17 and a half cents for the afternoon. Crude oil at $79.12 a barrel, that's up 97 cents. Diesel fuel or heating oil about 5 7/10 of a cent higher at 266 and 3/10, and the wholesale price of gasoline up 2 cents at $2.55 and 3/10 of a cent per gallon. Greg Johnson from TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com, here in Champaign County with the elevator system now joins us. Hi, Greg. Thank you for being here and for participating in yesterday's all-day ag outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I thought it was a fantastic day. Really good crowd, more than 200 in the room, and good conversations all day long, I think, within the crowd and between the crowd and those up front. I do appreciate you being there.
Well, thanks. It was great to be there. You're right. Good crowd. And I wish we had better news, more optimistic news, more bullish news to tell them. But, you know, the facts are the facts. And as John Adams said, facts are stubborn things, and we have to adjust. And so I think it was a year of adjustment. And I think a lot of people took away something from that yesterday.
You know, I think what surprised me more yesterday than anything else is it could have been a really somber day all day long, given the information that was being presented to them, because there wasn't really anything in the friendly to bullish side all day long, whether we were talking about weeds or biofuels sometimes or other things. But they were in a good mood all day, and we just had fun. Now, given that, I think yesterday, I didn't really pay that close attention, but I feel like yesterday was an update for soybeans, not today, at least at this point when you and I are talking. What do you think about this marketplace?
I think we're trying to find a bottom. You know, the farmer selling that needed to take place prior to March 1 to pay bills has now taken place. So we can say that the farmer selling has slowed up tremendously. So now we have to see whether there'll be any buying interest or not. You know, and if we do see some buying interest show up, that could cause a little bit of short covering, but you know, we get one day up, 2 days up, and then we get a 1 or 2 days down. And so it seems like the downward trend has stopped, but we have not seen the reversal yet. So we're kind of putting a bottom here, hopefully going sideways, and then waiting for the next piece of information to come out. Now, one thing that still continues to be negative is the wheat market. We're making new contract lows today. Russia just continues to flood the market with cheap wheat, and that cheaper wheat price is probably one reason why corn, which was higher at one point today, now has come back down to unchanged to slightly lower. So the wheat market is negative, but as far as corn and beans are concerned, I think most of the bad news that we know so far is in the market already.
And just a reminder for folks that you and I usually talk around the 11 o'clock time frame. While I do give numbers before we start this, with the closes, those aren't in, of course, when you and I are having our discussion. From yesterday, Do you think that producers will wait too long again to market what they have left for corn? And I think what I heard yesterday is take care to market in the March, April, May, maybe June time frame, and earlier rather than later, and when you're planting, if you can, if the rally comes.
I think you're exactly right. That's what I took away from yesterday, too. April, May, June historically is the right time to sell, and I think if we wait much longer than that and we have another big crop, we looked at the numbers yesterday, and they were not friendly. That would argue for lower prices going into the fall. So hopefully the farmers took that away from that. That's what I took away from all the presenters yesterday, is that we've got about 3 months here to see if we can get some seasonality rallies, some short covering rallies, hopefully some demand driven rallies. But rallies are going to be limited and probably need to be sold. So hopefully farmers will take advantage of that and get some offers in.
You know, well, we covered a lot of ground yesterday. One of the fundamentals we did not talk about very much, and I suppose because it's baked in maybe, is the ethanol side of the marketplace. Are there concerns there at this point about how much ethanol we'll use either for the rest of this marketing year or for the next marketing year?
You know, the ethanol demand has been basically flat. There's been enough electric vehicles coming online. The fear was that that trend would continue, but it feels like electric vehicles have kind of hit a little bit of a wall here. So, gas-powered vehicles that need 10% ethanol continue to be a pretty big source of demand. And so I think the demand for ethanol, given what the USDA is projecting, is probably pretty close. I don't think they need to cut it very much. Unfortunately, I don't think they need to increase it either. So the number that they're using, I think, is probably where we'll stay for a couple of months.
On Friday, USDA will update the monthly WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. Are there expected changes in the size of the South American, both Brazilian and Argentina crops?
The average guess for the Brazilian soybean crop is down 3 to 3.5 million metric tons. But they've been that much lower each of the last 2 months, and the USDA only lowers their estimate by 1 million metric tons each month. So if I had to guess, I would guess the USDA will once again lower it by 1 million. Now, eventually they could get to the number that the private analysts are thinking, but they probably won't get there tomorrow. So the average trade guess is 3 to 3.5 million metric tons lower, but I would guess that the USDA probably won't be that aggressive. I think they'll be very conservative in their reductions.
So not tomorrow, but of course on Friday. It's easy enough to slip. I've lost track of time myself. That'll be at 11 o'clock, and we'll put those on the website at willag.org at that time. What else will you be watching there, or will you simply turn your attention to both the grain stocks and the prospective plantings report that comes out at the end of the month?
Yeah, I think the grain stocks will give us a little bit more of a feeling as to whether farmers really did move corn or not. That's going to be as of March 1. So, it may not reflect fully what farmers have done, but it gives us an indication. So I think that's probably something that the trade will look at maybe even more so. They're not really expecting much change on the, obviously, the supply side in the U.S. situation and the demand side either. So, the stocks number and the South American numbers are probably going to be of prime importance.
I don't recall. Was it you yesterday that said farmers had 0% of their new crop corn sold?
I was exaggerating to make a point. I'm sure there's a little bit sold, but it's probably pretty close to zero. Yes, very, very little new crop. Well, and that makes sense. I mean, if they've still got half of the old crop corn, in their minds, why would they be selling new crop corn if they don't think the old crop corn price is high enough? Then they certainly don't think the new crop corn price is high enough to be selling. So, yeah, I would say that minimal new crop sales have been made so far on corn and soybeans.
Yeah, from my experience, and I usually either have myself either a corn crop or a soybean crop to sell. 1 year I did have, I went back-to-back soybeans, and so I had two crops to sell, and trying to sell the same crop in two different years is really, it's nerve-wracking, and it doesn't feel right. So I get the issue, but probably, I suppose they really ought to think about doing both if at the same time sometimes?
Sure. If the price is good, it's a good price for both old crop and new crop. Now, the one thing I would say is old crop corn costs you money. It's costing you interest. It's costing you storage. So there's a little bit more of an incentive to get that sold. The new crop, whether you sell it in April or whether you sell it in August, it really doesn't matter because you're not going to deliver it until the fall and get paid until fall. So that interest penalty doesn't hurt you, and there's no storage charges to hurt you. So if you think the prices are going to go higher into the summer, it does pay to hold on to new crop corn, before you make those sales. But if we have a typical year and we get rain in July, and typically the price goes down from the 4th of July on. So, if it's a good time to sell old crop corn, it may be a good time to sell some new crop corn as well.
We've talked a lot about corn, a little bit about wheat as it's related to corn, some about soybeans, but is there anything else in that marketplace we need to discuss for the day?
I think we need to keep an eye on inflation. Inflation is vitally important not only to the food prices, but to the input prices. We've seen some fertilizer prices, some potash prices start to work higher, and that's going to raise the input costs, and that may have a direct bearing on planning decisions for those that have not gotten those inputs locked in yet. So inflation, the government, the administration is trying to say that they've got it under control, but there's still some signs out there that we've got some sneaky inflation out there around the edges.
Indeed. Hey, thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week. Appreciate you being at the All Day Ag Outlook yesterday.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. In today's agricultural news, farm bill prospects are looking dimmer after recent comments by Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow, and as other priorities crowd out the legislative calendar in a presidential election year. The hints started this week.
We can get this done if people are serious. If people are serious about it, I'm serious about it.
Again, that was Ag Chair Stabenow in January. But last month, Politico quoted her saying at a White House event she'd rather stick with the lapsed 18 farm bill law already extended 1 year than compromise with Republicans on SNAP and climate cuts. Longtime GOP Ag Senator Chuck Grassley's already made up his mind on whether there's still time in a crowded legislative and political calendar to do a farm bill this year.
No, for myself, but I think it's more important to answer your question by what I think I heard reported on Chairwoman Stabenow saying that she thinks that the farm bill is going to have to be extended for one more year. Sounds to me like she's thrown in the towel.
Again, Grassley's colleague Stabenow from Michigan told nutrition advocates, when it comes to limiting anti-hunger programs in a new farm bill, I'm not going to do it. So if that means we continue the policies of the 2018 Farm Bill, that's okay. Republicans say they want more farm in the Farm Bill and argue the best way to do that is to reprogram some SNAP and climate spending. Renowned Texas A&M Ag Policy Chief Joe Outlaw was already looking at the tea leaves on a Farm Policy Facts Groundwork podcast in January.
I don't expect it to be done in 24 unless something wild happens after the election, and even then, if House or Senate flips, it's going to be enough change that I don't think it'll happen early in 25 either.
Outlaw's prediction is for maybe a summer 2025 farm bill. Elsewhere in Washington, D.C., the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act significantly changed federal individual income and estate tax policies, though some were temporary. In 2018, the legislation increased the estate tax exemption amount from $5.49 million to $11.18 million. This increase is set to expire at the end of 2025. The exclusion amount will revert in 2026 to $6.98 million. Per deceased person. Large farms would experience the largest increase in the share of estates owing estate tax, increasing from 2.8 to 7.3%. Total federal estate tax for farm estates would be expected to be more than double to $1.2 billion if the provision were allowed to expire. And that's a look at today's Ag News. Let's check in now on some of the growing regions across the planet and see what weather conditions and climate have been like. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hello, Drew. Thank you for being with us again this week.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Hope everyone's doing well on your side of the Mississippi.
Yeah, we are. And we'll talk about that because well means I've been happy being able to be outside. The weather has been really warm. I want to come back to that and see whether that means anything later. But let's start in South America, where the second crop corn needs rainfall to make sure that it can get through what will be coming, I guess, still yet, the dry season normally there. What are conditions like and what are your concerns today?
Yeah, you know, since we talked last week, there hasn't been a lot of really good, meaningful rain in some of those Safrinha second season corn production areas in Brazil. And the moisture profile there is actually no worse off than it was a week ago because they are getting some scattered showers and just enough to kind of keep status quo. So the crops are hanging in there. Yeah, there are some fields that are not doing that well, but they are few in number. I went back and looked at the length of time that we have seen this lighter than usual rainfall pattern. Well, of course, below normal precipitation has been most of their summer, but the most significant drier bias period we're in right now is only 2 weeks old at the most. But if you go through all of western and interior southern parts of Brazil where the dryness is, it's hard to find anybody that hasn't had at least an inch and a half or 2 inches of rain in the past 2 weeks. Now, from a U.S. perspective, that doesn't sound so terrible. You got to remember the soils are sandier there, and it dries down quickly, and their temperatures have been running in the 90s pretty routinely. So, they are firming up the ground at times. But like I said, there's a few pockets out there that have had less than an inch of rain, but it's by far not representative of the whole production region. So, you know, maybe there's 20% of the region that it really needs a good drink of water. The rest of the area is doing all right. But our biggest concern isn't so much in the month of March as much as it is, where are we going to be when we get to the first week of April? That's when the rainy season usually ends. And I don't think that the subsoil moisture profile, which, by the way, is rated marginally adequate to slightly short right now across the Safrinha corn area. So if we don't make a lot of change in that subsoil moisture situation in between now and the first of April, which I think we may not, then when the rains stop, they will be introducing the potential for some notable stress when reproduction occurs in May for these crops that are still going in the ground now. And so I do think there is a problem there because I think the temperatures, once the rainy season ends, are going to continue to be a little warmer than normal. And I think the rainy season will end normally. So I think putting all that together, if that subsoil is not completely saturated on the last day of the rainy season, then I think there's going to be some potential issues unless some miraculous rain event comes along in late April or May that could help to bolster that soil back to a pretty good position. Now, I remember one other year, but I can't remember what date it was. I'm still looking for it, where something similar to this occurred, where we were dry going into the dry season, but we managed to get rain in late April and May and no one saw that coming. It turned out to be an all right season. So there is potential that we could still go the other way. I just don't have a lot of confidence that we're going to see that kind of a switch take place in April or May. But that's something that could still happen. So nothing is set in stone. You know, it's still weather we're talking about.
If you could text me that last date of the rainy season, I'll put it in my calendar. otherwise,
you send me a check first, and then I'll send you that date.
oh, I see how you are. Okay.
It's always difficult to figure that kind of thing out. I do not believe the rainy season will end early, but I do think that somewhere in that first half of April we'll see an end to it. But I also don't believe we're going to see good general soaking rains between now and then either.
And now let's come back to the United States. I discussed the mild weather we've had, warm weather, particularly 30 degrees above normal temperatures in our part of the world. Does that correlate, or the transition from the Niñas to one, from one to the other, mean that we have summer that is warmer or hotter or drier or those kinds of things?
Yeah, absolutely. We have three strikes already against us a little bit as we go into the summer season. The first one, just since you hit on that, the transition from El Niño to La Niña, the quicker you make that transition, the higher the potential is that you'll have a drier and warmer scenario playing out in the plains and western Corn Belt. We've seen this a few times in the years of recorded history for El Niño and La Niña, and I'm talking about the legitimate data, not the tree ring data, but we do see that there is potential just from that perspective that we may be a little drier bias. There's also a study we've done, we did way back in 2017, that linked a warmer than usual Februarys. Those have to be near record or record warm Februarys, but 72% of the time, those warm Februarys are followed by warm Julys. So that's another thing to keep in mind. And then the last factor, and this is the biggest one, and that is the lunar cycle, or the 18-year cycle, as I call it, is showing 5 out of 6 years to show above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation, again, in the plains and western Corn Belt. And we went on and did a study, a more in-depth study for that region. We wanted to see how many extreme days we had of temperatures in the summers of those 6 years. And we came up with all six of them having an above normal number of 100 degree days. One of the 6 years, which was 1916, was really quite cool in general, but they still managed to have greater number of 100 degree days just by a handful. But the other years that stand out, everyone knows about 1934, that's one of these years. 1988 is one of those years. And 2006, actually, believe it or not, was one of the hotter summers we've had in recent decades. And we had a lot of 100-degree days back then. All of these years are part of this cycle. So we're a little nervous that maybe we're going to have some heat to deal with this summer. And that, on top of below normal precip, may, you know, tilt the scale just a little bit more on the lower side for yields in the western Corn Belt.
That was a theme for us yesterday at the All Day Ag Outlook. Hope somebody has a bad year. I suspect that meetings in the western Corn Belt are like, oh, I hope the eastern Corn Belt has a bad year too. So
absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Well, that's the way it is. We'll talk to you again next week to see if we can suss out some more information about what the spring and planting season will look like here in the United States. We do appreciate all the work you do for us. Thanks much. And we'll talk to you again soon. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Join us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced by Logan County farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.